Well, Ruth chapter 3 this evening. If you would turn there with me, Ruth chapter 3. Every 4 years, a special day comes around. February 29th, we call it Leap Day. Maybe somebody here was, actually you had your birthday on Leap Day or something like that, and your birthday floats back and forth. But what you may not have known about this day, probably unless you are a person given to watching a lot of chick flicks or something like that, is that this day is actually a day of marriage proposals by women. Legend has it that in the 5th century, St. Bridget complained to St. Patrick about the length of time women had to wait for men to propose to them. And maybe some of you ladies could sympathize with that with your husband. You just thought, when in the world is this guy ever going to get with the program and finally put a ring on my finger? St. Patrick's solution was that all yearning females would be granted the right to propose once every 4 years on Leap Day. In some countries, if the man refuses the proposal, it was then his responsibility to give the woman money or buy her a dress. In upper class societies in Europe, if the man refused marriage, he then had to purchase her actually 12 pairs of gloves, maybe to keep her fingers covered at that point, hiding her bare hand. And as we pick up in the book of Ruth chapter 3, we enter actually into one of the most remarkable love stories ever told, in which Ruth actually asked Boaz to marry her. It's really a spectacular story of genuine love. This text is going to tell us very little about attraction, about romance, about passion, or any of those things. It's just presenting to us a very, very high form of love. Boaz is going to describe Ruth's proposal and all of the preparations leading up to it as an act of kindness or an act of love. As bizarre as the whole scene may seem to be, Boaz says, wow, this what you have just done is extremely loving, not just to him, but to many other people. As we consider the genuine nature of their love, both for each other as well as the people all around them, I think it brings us great conviction actually about our own love often for the people in our lives. I think this text would certainly have a lot to say for people who are married perhaps, but frankly, I think what it says about love is things that we could all take and apply to our everyday lives. Our efforts to love other people are often full of impurity. Maybe we do kind things for other people, we help people out, we do this or that, and sometimes even in those efforts and the things that we do, there are things in our heart that really make whatever that is all about us. So we're doing things for our own good, for our own benefit. Frankly, often we're just quite selfish. And God wants you to spend your life genuinely loving other people. What we have here in Ruth chapter 3 is a great example of that. You'll remember that both Ruth and her mother-in-law have come back from the land of Moab. And they're impoverished in many ways. They're hardly able to provide for their own needs. And Ruth says to her mother-in-law, Naomi, I'm going to go out to the fields and I'm going to glean. And she just so happens, out of all the fields in the area, all the fields in Bethlehem, she just so happens to end up in the field of a man by the name of Boaz. And you remember that Boaz treats her with great love, with great compassion. He feeds her basically a feast of food. He protects her. He looks after her and really does kind deed after kind deed after kind deed towards Ruth. And now here we are in chapter 3 and the story progresses. We want to look together this evening at five crowning qualities of genuine love. The first crowning quality that we see in the life of these two individuals is this, that love makes preparations. And in particular, it makes preparations to please. Look at verses 1 to 5 of chapter 3. With me. It says, then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, my daughter, should I not seek rest for you, that it may be well with you? Is not Boaz our relative with whose young men you were? See, he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor. Wash, therefore, and anoint yourself, and put on your cloak, and go down to the threshing floor. But do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. But when he lies down, observe the place where he lies. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down, and he will tell you what to do. And she replied, all that you say I will do. Talk about a bizarre passage. I don't know how those verses strike you when you read the book of Ruth on your own. What is going on there? Well, we're going to find out. Acts of love, though we want to take note, often require forethought and preparation. There are times in your life where you can see a need and you can meet it, you can show love right on the spot. But in the first five verses of our text, we see Ruth making preparations for her act of kindness, her proposal. In chapter 1, verse 9, Naomi prayed that Ruth would find rest. And now in chapter 3, verse 1, Naomi's actually going to put feet to her prayers, which is a great thing to do, by the way. We can pray many, many things, but what a great thing it is for us to actually pray prayers and then put feet to those. And Naomi's going to do that here. In chapter 3, verse 1, Naomi has decided that it is time to indeed do something about this. Verse 1 says, "Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, 'My daughter, should I not seek rest for you, that it may be well with you?'" Naomi, all of a sudden, is on a mission. There's a fine, eligible bachelor in town, and she is going to get her daughter-in-law married. She's going to do something about this. Here's Naomi's plan for Ruth to find rest. She says, "Ruth, you need to go propose to Boaz." Wow, that must have been quite the conversation in that house. "Here's what you need to do, Ruth," says Naomi in chapter 3, verses 1 to 5. "You need to wash. You need to get all cleaned up. Anoint yourself. Put on some perfume or oil. Put on your best garment. Get dressed up. You want to look the best you possibly can for Boaz." And Ruth replies to her mother-in-law, "All that you say to me, I will do." Ruth, out of love for Boaz, but also for her family and for Naomi, is putting forethought and preparation into this act, which she's about to do. And whether it be for a spouse or a friend or a church member or a coworker or any other person, showing genuine love often takes forethought and preparation. Often, if you are going to show people love, you're going to have to think about how to do that. You're going to have to take some proactive steps ahead of time to make that happen. Several years ago, when I was in university, I had to do a church internship one summer. And I lined up to do a church internship at a church that I'd never been there. I didn't know the people. But I had lined this up with a pastor. Myself and two other friends of mine were all going to be there for the summer interning. So I was pretty nervous to show up there. And this was a church of maybe 600 or 700 people, and felt a little bit intimidated. And we arrived on a Saturday night, and they showed us around and actually showed us where we would be living. And so I remember this lady took us into this little apartment-type building that they had prepared for us. And there were our beds and towels and toiletries and a basket of candy and chocolate bars. And I walked in that room and I thought, wow, this is really nice. Like, they've actually gone out of their way to prepare for us and make sure that we have a good summer here and feel comfortable. And so often, as we seek to love other people, it's that very type of thing that's needed. Something's going to happen. Love should be shown. People would be blessed by being loved. And what it's going to take is you actually thinking ahead and saying, how can I do this? What can I do to be a blessing to this person or that person and show them love? When you hear about someone in need this week, maybe you need to take the time to plan to prepare to meet that need. Often in something like hospitality, for example, and showing love that way, you may need to sit down with your calendar 2, 3, 4 weeks ahead of time and go, just realistically, when am I free? I want to go help this person with this or that project. Well, if I'm going to do that, I'm going to have to plan to make that happen. My life's busy or whatever. Making a meal and delivering it takes time. Writing your spouse a note or a letter takes time. All of this time in preparation is always time well spent. And we want to move on, though, to a second crowning quality of genuine love. And that is this, that love takes risks. Look at verses 6 and 7. We read, "So she went down to the threshing floor and did just as her mother-in-law had commanded her. And when Boaz had eaten and drunk and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain. Then she came softly and uncovered his feet and lay down." Genuine love requires sacrifices, putting yourself in vulnerable positions, and taking risks. Back in verse 3, Naomi told Ruth to go down to the threshing floor after she had cleaned up in order to propose to Boaz. Thinking, this is crazy. Who does this? Ruth's decision to sneak down to the threshing floor where Boaz had been working and putting and was going to be sleeping and to there propose to him put her in a very vulnerable position. Yet her love for Boaz and Naomi made her willing to take the risk. What type of risk was Ruth taking? Well, she faced humiliation, I think, first of all. She could go down there, wake Boaz up, basically proposed to him, and he's like, who are you? What are you doing? And he could treat her poorly, and maybe he could say, you know, I'm wealthy and you're poor. I want nothing to do with the likes of you, even though he had been very kind to her. Further, if she was seen, who knows what would be said about her or what she would be accused of as she's going down to the threshing floor after dark. And yet genuine love takes risks. I think to better understand this passage, a little bit of information about harvest time is helpful. So I want to read you a lengthy quote from a man by the name of Warren Wiersbe. He's written many devotional commentaries, and I think what he has to say here is helpful. Harvesting and threshing were cooperative enterprises. The men of a village would take turns using the threshing floor, which was usually a raised platform outside the village and often on a hill where it could catch the evening breeze. The men would deposit the sheaves on the floor and then separate the grain from the stalks by having oxen walk on it or by beating the stalks. Once the grain was separated, the workers would throw the grain into the air and the breeze would carry the chaff away while the grain fell to the floor. The grain would then be heaped up to be carried away for marketing or storage. The men often worked in the evening when the breeze was up and they slept at the threshing floor to protect the harvest. So these guys are working hard. And you imagine even harvest time here with all of our modern machinery and equipment. It is a busy time for farmers. So the men may have also slept at the threshing floor in order to get started right away, first thing the next morning. So Boaz and his men are working hard. And as Boaz drifts off to sleep, he's laying by his grain, protecting it. He doesn't want someone else to come steal it. Ruth quietly came up beside him and she uncovered his feet and laid down. And I want to assure you here that there's nothing immoral going on. It just seems so weird, I think, from our cultural perspective. You might ask, what is this uncovering his feet business? I think it's actually exactly that. Okay, so he's laid down. He's probably got some sort of cloak or garment, heavy garment, keeping him warm. And Ruth goes up and she uncovers Boaz's feet so that they're exposed to the cool night air. And it's just a matter of time before Boaz is going to wake up cold. And when he does, who knows what he will think about Ruth and what she has to say. She's taking a lot of risks. In the late 1800s, Philip and Lucy Bliss, who you may be familiar with as hymn writers, boarded the Pacific Express. They had hopped on a train together. They left their two children behind with a relative, and they were going somewhere in the middle of a snowstorm. The train was already late by the time they got picked up. And that train ended up crossing a bridge. And as it crossed the bridge, this trestle bridge, it collapsed and several cars actually detached and fell 75 feet down into a ravine. And actually, Philip was okay. He walked away fine, but basically in the wreckage, a fire began and his wife was trapped in the mangled seats in one of those cars. He decided, oh, I'm going to go back in and get her. And people tried to, don't go back in there. You know, this is a disaster. And he said, if I cannot save her, I will perish with her. And he ran back into the fiery car, and both him and his wife died that day in that train wreck, leaving their two children behind. He was only 38 years old. We go, wow, what a sacrifice he made out of his love for his wife. But you know what I think happens? I think most of us, for the people that we love dearly, we say, well, I sure hope that, you know, I would take a bullet for my wife, or I'd protect my kids in some moment of crisis and even die if it meant saving them. I think many people would actually do that for those that they love. But what's hard for us often is just the day-to-day risk-taking and the day-to-day sacrifices that say, I love you. Genuine love requires sacrifices, putting yourself in vulnerable positions and taking risks. And the choice to love is often a choice to get burned and hurt. I find it's often people who have already been hurt that tend to struggle with this. So, for example, as we look at the life of Ruth, what do we know about her? Well, we know Ruth's been married once. She probably married her former husband at a young age. Maybe she was 16, 17, 18 years old. That's probably would have been common in that day. She probably loved him dearly, and it's not long, just a few years later, before her husband dies. He's gone. Well, you put yourself in Ruth's shoes. You've been hurt once. You got close to somebody, and he died. I mean, it's extremely painful. No doubt. And I think for a person in a situation like that, it's, well, if I never get close to someone like that again, I won't get hurt. I've been down that road before and it was extremely painful. And if I go down this road with another person, it's very likely I could get hurt that same way, so I'm just not even going to go there. And I think that same thing happens so often in people's life. You get burned. And I don't necessarily mean in your marriage relationship, although it could be there. It could be with your coworkers. It could be with your family members. And you did put yourself out on a limb before and you got hurt. And so in order to protect yourself, you just say, I'm not going out on a limb again. And as we look at this example, we see the opposite of that. We see people saying, you know what, I am going to take risks. This isn't going to be all about me. If I get hurt, God's big enough to deal with those wounds, but I'm going to keep choosing to love. What a great example that we have in the life of Ruth here. A third crowning quality is that love protects. In verse 8 and 9, the nature of genuine love is that it always seeks to protect, and Boaz demonstrates this by the protection he provides for Ruth. Ruth is just literally given Boaz cold feet, and precisely at midnight he wakes up. You know what it's like when you're, midnight, he's probably sound asleep. And she nearly probably scared him half to death. And I love what the text says in verse 8. It says, at midnight, the man was startled and turned over, and behold, look, a woman lay at his feet. And here it is. Here's Ruth's proposal. Can't you just picture this scene? They're down there at the threshing floor. Ruth has taken all this time. She's washed. She's probably anointed herself with oil. She's put on her nicest garment of clothing. Or she's probably taken time to do her hair. She's looking her finest. Midnight, Boaz wakes up from a deep sleep. His hair is probably matted down on both sides and sticking up straight up in the back. He hasn't brushed his teeth. He probably just had a huge feast of meat. He's been working all day. He probably smells awful. He wakes up and he asks, who is? He doesn't even know who she is. He's just stunned. Now notice the words of Ruth's proposal in verse 9. It says, he said, who are you? And she answered, I'm Ruth, your servant. Spread your wings over your servant, for you are a redeemer. She's basically saying to Boaz, Boaz, take me under your wing. Protect me, Boaz. Take me to be your wife. Provide me with security. And he was in a unique place culturally to do that, and given the context with the Mosaic Law. Ruth knew that under the wings of Boaz, she would be safe, and he had already demonstrated that. He had already protected her. A few verses later, Boaz agrees that he will indeed do that, that he will indeed seek to marry her, to look after her. He demonstrates genuine love to Ruth by providing protection and security for her. And this is further seen, actually, when she leaves the scene early in the morning. He asks Ruth to leave. He was protecting her name from slander and false accusations. He's thinking about her. There's a book that I've enjoyed. It's called The Masculine Mandate. It's written by a man by the name of Richard Phillips. It's just about Christian manhood. And I want to read an excerpt from that book. He writes, when Paul says that a husband must embrace self-sacrifice for the sake of his wife's well-being, this, of course, includes her physical safety. But the main threat against which a man must protect his wife is his own sin. And he goes on to say, a friend once expressed his awakening to this truth in these words. I used to think that if a man came into my house to attack my wife, I would certainly stand up to him. But then I came to realize that the man who enters my house and assaults my wife every day is me. Through my anger, my harsh words, my complaints, and my indifference. As a Christian, I came to realize that the man I needed to kill in order to protect my wife is myself as a sinner. I think that's exactly right. I think most of us could resonate with that, whether you're married or not. You would maybe protect people from harm, but often we're the very ones harming other people. With our words, with our actions, with our deeds. And genuine love does the opposite. It protects physically, emotionally, and spiritually. Are you doing that in your relationships with your spouse, with your children, with your friends, with your coworkers? Boaz, we see, has well protected Ruth's name. Do you protect the name of others, or do you use your tongue to their hurt? And I think so many of us are guilty of this. I know I'm guilty of this, that we don't protect the names of other people. We wrong them. Fourth crowning quality that we see in verses 10 to 13 is that love sets aside self. It's not about you. Love doesn't focus on self. Rather, it's consumed with the needs of others. And Boaz blessed Ruth after she proposed because she could have gone after another fine young man. Boaz recognizes, you know, you have this young woman who is impoverished and destitute. Maybe she could have easily got married to a younger man. Boaz is a bit older, it would seem, from the text. But out of genuine love for Boaz and her family, Ruth proposes marriage to him. And remember, unless Ruth marries a kinsman redeemer, the family line's going to basically die, which in Jewish culture is extremely important here. Boaz recognized this reality, which is why he said to Ruth in verse 10, "May you be blessed by the Lord, my daughter. You have made this last kindness, this last act of love, greater than the first, in that you have not gone after young men, whether rich or poor." And Ruth is just teaching us a valuable lesson. Life's not all about you. And she's demonstrating that. My life is not all about me. There's such a bigger picture than that. She was a remarkable woman, and Boaz recognizes that. If you look down at verse 11, he says, Boaz says, "For all my fellow townsmen know that you are a worthy woman." That word worthy was also used of Boaz back in chapter 2, verse 1. It's the same word that's used of the Proverbs 31 woman. That's a word that basically simply means capacity. Boaz is saying, everybody knows you're a very capable woman. And what's so amazing about Ruth and the Proverbs 31 woman is that she takes all of her skills and all of her capacities, all her capabilities, and uses those in the interest of others. And that's what Ruth is doing. And so she's a gem. Verses 11 to 14 indicate that Boaz was the same type of selfless person. And we see the genuineness, the purity of his love by what he says. Look at verses 11 to 14. "And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you ask, for all my fellow townsmen know that you are a worthy woman. And now it is true that I am a redeemer." He's saying, I am in the position to marry you, to redeem you. "Yet there is a redeemer nearer than I. Remain tonight, and in the morning, if he will redeem you, good. Let him do it. But if he is not willing to redeem you, then as the Lord lives, I will redeem you. Lie down until the morning." Boaz isn't saying there, like, hey, there's just actually this guy that's first in line. And if he'll do it, I'd be really happy if that guy would do it, because then I don't have to do it. What he's saying, actually, what's on his heart is, what's important, Ruth, is that you be redeemed. What's important is that you be protected, that you be looked after, that you be provided for. And if that's someone else doing that, and that's better, I'm good with that. And if that's me, I'd be delighted to do it. One writer says the great concern of Boaz was the redemption of Ruth, even if another kinsman redeemer had to do it. Boaz isn't in this for himself. He genuinely cares about her as a person. There was an older man in my church growing up whose wife just mentally basically went crazy as she became older. And I don't know if it was an Alzheimer's or what the case was, but she didn't remember anything. She didn't know who he was. She would go wander off, and she lived for years and years and years after she became that way. And this man, his name was Paul, just carefully and graciously looked after her. I mean, she would be mean to him. I remember sitting in their living room one day, and she doesn't even know who he is anymore, and she's just snapping at him. What a frustrating situation to be in. And yet he just patiently loved and patiently cared, and I think for years, maybe even decades, he did that until finally she died. Love doesn't focus on self. It focuses on others. And I think it'd be good just for you to look in your own heart and ask, are you consumed with yourself? I think most of us, that is such a temptation, and we sort of go in and out of that, where we can be extremely consumed with ourselves, and God convicts us, and next thing you know, we love other people again, but we're just always so prone to go back to loving self. And finally, a fifth crowning quality of genuine love that we see from these two is that, and Boaz in particular, is that love provides. Look at verses 14 to 18 as we finish this chapter. "So she lay down at his feet until the morning, but arose before one could recognize another. And he said, 'Let it not be known that the woman came to the threshing floor.' And he said, 'Bring the garment you are wearing and hold it out.' So she held it. And he measured out 6 measures of barley and put it on her. Then she went into the city, and when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, "How did you fare, my daughter?" Then she told her all that the man had done for her, saying, "These 6 measures of barley he gave to me, for he said to me, 'You must not go back empty-handed to your mother-in-law.'" She replied, "Wait," this is Naomi now speaking to Ruth, "wait, my daughter, until you learn how the matter turns out, for the man will not rest, but will settle the matter today." He's going to deal with this right away. Love provides for the needs of others. Boaz wasn't going to send Ruth away empty-handed. We saw already that he has just lavished all sorts of food upon Ruth. She probably still had food at home. And yet he's there by his pile of grain. He basically says, "Here you go. Here's a bunch more. You take this home. You and your mother-in-law, Naomi, need it. I want to make sure that your needs are provided for." Before she left in the morning, Boaz did that for her, and he lovingly chose to provide for her needs. But as we're going to see, this is just the beginning. Ruth heads home and tells her mother-in-law, Naomi, all that has transpired. And upon hearing this, Naomi says, "Just wait. Let's see what happens tomorrow." I think as we think about this idea of love providing, the greatest example that we have of that is the gospel. How do we know that love provides? Obviously, we see it here, but we see it in God himself. That God so loved the world that he sent his only begotten Son. That God saw a need in your life, and he saw a need in my life. He saw us in our desperation, and his love for you provided an answer. When he sent his Son, Jesus Christ, to live perfectly in your place when you have not lived perfectly. When he sent his Son, Jesus Christ, to die on the cross to pay for your sin, that should send you to hell. He provided at great cost and expense to you so that you could repent of your sin and believe and have eternal life. God is that way. And your love ought to reflect that love. It ought to look like that love. And the only way that's going to happen is if you walk in the Spirit. The fruit of the Spirit is love. So just to wrap up here this evening, what are these 5 crowning qualities of genuine love? Love makes preparations, it takes risks, it protects, it sets aside self, and it provides. I'd encourage you to look at your love for others and just say, "God, where am I falling short? What can I do better? Will you help me?" And hopefully this week you'll succeed by God's grace. You'll grow in that area. Will you bow with me for prayer tonight?